And welcome to another edition of LGBT in the Ring, your rainbow bastion for all things pro wrestling. I am your host, Brian Bell, here with you once again, and we have another fun one in store for all of y'all today. Of course, our guest this week, you may know her as Ref Domino, but soon you will also know her as Jess Reina Capablanca. Yes, the official of Full Queer and Hood Slam is stepping into the ring proper in a new role, making her wrestling debut, at the next Full Queer show, Pride or Die 2, America Has a Problem, going up against Dave Reckoning on June 9th, down in Richmond, California. We had the chance to sit down with Jess and chat about this transition from referee to wrestler, both the in-storyline reasons and a lot of the backstory there, as well as just her, in general, her journey in wrestling here, as well as the surprising inspirations behind this chess-based character that she has. It's a really fun conversation. I'm really glad we were able to have it. And I'm glad to bring it to all of y'all here today as well. Before we get going, though, just a real quick housekeeping note. I apologize that our Patreon exclusive show Required Reading did not drop over the weekend. That is on me. I apologize there. It will drop tomorrow on the Patreon for all $5 subscribers over there. Of course, that episode we're talking about Akira Kurosawa's acclaimed Macbeth adaptation, Throne of Blood, alongside a outstanding, stellar, mesmerizing match from October 9th, 2000, featuring Toshiaki Kawada against Kinsuke Sasaki. This is the start of a three-month arc, all culminating with Hollis and I chatting about 6-3-94 on the 30th anniversary, or the 30 year anniversary of that match happening, rather. It's gonna be a whole lot of fun. So this time around, we're talking about Toshiaki Kawada. Next episode, the May episode, even though I know this one's coming out in May too, the May episode is going to be looking at Mitsuharu Misawa, where I think the match that I have selected for that is going to be Mitsuharu Misawa versus Jumbo Tsuruta from 1990. Of course, the real kicking off point of Misawa as a top star in All Japan Pro Wrestling. And then we'll end it with 6-3-94. I felt like it was a perfect little arc to have to introduce Hollis to both Kawada and Misawa, as someone who is just learning about All Japan and really just the greater world of pro wrestling as a whole. I love being the introduction to that for him. That first episode is going to drop tomorrow, Friday on the Patreon there. And then we'll keep the ball rolling until June. And then after that, you know, we'll have another one, in July. So, but yeah, I just wanted to touch base with everybody there. That'll be up for $5 subscribers. If you want to listen to that, and as well as the entire back catalog of Required Reading that we've done now, almost a year's worth, $5 over at patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. It's outstanding stuff over there. Really fun show to do every time around. So with that being said, let's jump into my conversation here with Jess Reina Capablanca. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning into LGBT in the Ring. I'm just going to take a quick break here to let you know ways that you can support the show. And say thank you to some very rad people that help make this show as amazing as it is. First off, if you would like to support the show, we are on Patreon now, patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. Multiple tiers there for everyone that feels so moved to support this show. We've got numerous patron benefits over there, including bonus shows that are going to be coming out monthly, roundtable of those sort of things. So definitely go over and check us out. Again, patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. Every single dollar that is pledged there to support the show is very, very humbling, and we thank you.
We also have a merch store over on Brainbuster Tees. Go to brainbustertees.com and search LGBT in the ring. We got t-shirts, tank tops, all kinds of good stuff. And, you know, always looking at some new things as well. But definitely check us out on Brainbuster Tees there as well. You can follow the show on social media as well. We're everywhere that we have accounts. We're at LGBT Ring Pod. That's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, co-host, Mastodon, whatever. We're there. So follow the show there. You can follow me at WonderboyOTM on Twitter and Instagram as well. We also want to give a huge thank you to Sarah and the Safe Word for the show's theme, Formula 666 from the album Red Hot and Holy. You can find them on Twitter at STSWBand, or you can check out their music on both Spotify and Bandcamp. Another great way to support the show is over at independentwrestling.tv. Check out IWTV for the best in current and classic independent pro wrestling, including live events from top independent promotions worldwide. You can use our code LGBTRingPod or visit the URL tinyurl.com/IWTVLGBT. And whenever you, as long as you use that code to open your account and keep that active, we get a kickback from IWTV. So your subscription to watch all the great wrestling that we talk about on this show goes to support the show as well. Thumbs up there. Of course, if you want to read more of my pro wrestling writing, you can check out outsports.com. And if you are into video games, I also co-host a video game news Twitch stream every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's called the Mr. Video Game Super Show. I co-host that with two dear friends and Twitch streamers, SlackerKite and Lady Merowin. Just run through the week's gaming news, or we throw on a game and play and just have fun and be dumb. It's great. But you can check that out every Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at twitch.tv/deadsunentertainment, sun like the star. With that said, let's get back to the show. What's up, guys, gals, and non-binary pals? Welcome back to LGBT in the Ring, and I'm very pleased to have as my guest this week someone who is well-known in the Bay Area pro wrestling scene at this point, especially outside of that, too, if you pay attention to Hood Slam at all, which you should, because Hood Slam is amazing. But, of course, we know her for reffing matches in Hood Slam and Full Queer and various other spots throughout the Bay Area. But it seems like we're on the precipice of something completely new for her. So whether you know her as Ref Domino or Jess Rada Capablanca, please welcome her to the show today. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty well. I'm watching my cat stare out the window, and I'm wondering if her voice is going to make an appearance. It might.
I had to wrangle my cat out of my office before I hopped on this call, so I understand.
I was thinking about that, but I realized, like, if I leave her outside, she's going to make more noise outside than she ever will inside. She's going to be like, why is the door locked? Let me in.
It must meet my demands at all times. Exactly. Yes.
And I do.
Well, it's awesome to have the official of Hood Slam here on the show today. I know we've been kind of talking a little bit about when to have you on, and I didn't know necessarily why the timing that you chose was the perfect one, but it turns out to be the perfect one here, as we saw from the fallout for the last Full Queer show. It seems like Ref Domino is going to be stepping into a new role there here coming up soon.
That is absolutely true. I mean, you know, it's not like anything's been officially announced, but that's the plan. Mm-hmm. You know, and when I first started reffing for Full Queer, I was like just doing what they asked, you know, and then like I started taking like a ref bump on like almost every show, and like there's so many, because like in that promo that I cut, like I talk about all of them, and I'm pretty sure that's all of them, but I might have forgotten one, I'm not sure. And then it became like, you know, I know it's a very common trope is from refs that start to wrestle, but it's still, it was just like very fitting because like half of the roster has hit me at this point.
It's time for you to hit back.
Exactly.
Yes. You know, I was there. I think the we briefly met for a little bit at the Berenson Street Fair show. And I remember distinctly, like, I don't know if that was the first one with when Brooke Havoc stunned you.
Definitely not the first, but that was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Doing
Why
the
is that?
I think like the way that it happened and the way I played it off like was really entertaining for me because like I took the stunner and then I was like DQing her as I was falling over and taking the bump. And then like I took the bump and I even landed on the title belt, which was not intentional, but it just happened to be there and I landed back first on the title belt and I like, you know, so I like DQ'd her as I was falling unconscious and all of it was just like it was just very fun, very funny to me. It was just great.
No, I definitely felt the humor in it as well. Like, I don't know, it's one thing I love about the full queer presentation. Like, it can have a seriousness to it at times, but at the end of the day, like, there's always an underlying like sense of humor to everything, you know. Even down to like, you know, I would say like some of the more like dastardly heels of the company right now are like, you know, Rei Kaiju and Brutal Rob Hands. And it literally is just a gimmick, like based off of like it's all like built off of like this gimmick that Hans has been running with for years at this point, where
Oh,
you know
yeah.
he's like a
He's huge.
giant. He's
He's huge. He's
so
6 foot
big.
seven and 313 pounds.
You don't want to run into him.
No, you don't, you know. And I actually think he was involved in the first ref spot that I'm only just now remembering that I did with Full Queer, and that was like an earthquake spot. Like it took like two people to suplex him, and he took the suplex, and I earthquaked, you know. And like we like got to the back after, and he was like, "Good job on that earthquake." I was like, "Yeah, it just felt like what I was supposed to do." And he's like, "Nobody told you to do that." I'm like, "No." And he's like, "We should have." Good.
You showed you have an aptitude. You have a
Yeah,
nat There's a naturalness to this for you.
was just so funny. He's like, "Wait, no one told you to do that?" I'm like, "No, I don't know. It just made sense. I don't know."
Well, obviously we'll talk a little bit more about this coming up with and you challenging Dave Reckoning here, you know, everything, but I want to kind of go back to the beginning a bit here for you, because you know we've known you so far most like really as Ref Domino, but you know I'm curious to ask about like kind of your wrestling origins. Like, what made you really get like drawn to this thing and make you think that it was something that you wanted to give a shot?
So like I make, you know, she knows this. I made no bones about it. It was Hood Slam. It was Dark Sheik. So like I moved to California a couple years ago, and well, like 2.5 at this point. And someone I was seeing at the time was like, "You really love wrestling." So I was just a fan. I just watched WWE and NXT and other stuff. And she's like, "You should come to Hood Slam." And I was like, "I don't know what that is." You know, I just moved here like 2 weeks ago. I'm from New York. And so I go to Hood Slam. I have no expectations. I don't know what's gonna happen. She told me about it like the day before the show, so I didn't have time to look it up or anything. And I get there and it's outside. And the first thing I see when I get through the gate is someone getting into the ring. And the only thing I remember thinking at the time was, whoever this person is, they're doing gender things and this is great. And I don't know who they are, but I already love it. And as it turns out, it was Dark Sheik in a Joker cosplay. So, like, of all things to walk into and experience for the very first time, that was it. And I was in love with Hood Slam from minute one. I started attending every show. and I interacted with her a little bit on Twitter here and there, but mostly I was just attending all the shows and talking to people after the show and stuff. And I've told her this story, but after one specific show, she was talking with like me and a few of the fans who were like in a little circle, and I don't remember the exact way she phrased it, and I'm pretty sure she was joking, but I'm far too autistic to not have taken her seriously. She was like, "Who am I going to get in the ring with next?" And I thought she was referring to like the fans as a joke. And I'm pretty sure she was like kayfabing who her next opponent was in hindsight, you know. But I just was like, "Wait, what? I could try this, do this thing?" And that was the moment. Like that was it. I messaged her and I was like, "How do I start?" And then she sent me over to Anton and Anton specifically, but to Stoner U. I messaged Anton, and I started training pretty soon, like less than 2 months after that.
God, it's amazing how quickly these things like happen and how they like ramp up like so fast. Like once you're on that treadmill, it just like goes.
And I've been training for less than 2 years at this point, like a year and 8 months or something like that. So it was very fast. Like it was less than 2 years ago when that show happened, where I mistakenly took her seriously for all that, and like here I am today. You know, it's quick.
So talk to me about like the first time going to Stoner U. Because I feel like if you don't watch the Stoner U shows that they put up on YouTube, like or some of like the pandemic era Hood Slam stuff that went up, like I feel like the Stoner U dojo has a very distinct look and feel and sense of community to it, I would
Absolutely.
say.
Absolutely.
Did that strike you like immediately as walking in there? Like, what was like the initial reactions
Oh,
to
it
that?
did. It did, absolutely, because I tell people who are gonna like come to like a dojo show or something for the first time, basically what I felt walking up to it. And that was, if you look at it from the outside, you're gonna feel like you should probably not be here. Because like from the outside, I don't think, have you ever seen it?
I haven't been there in person,
Okay.
no.
So like from the outside, it looks like a what maybe could have once been a used car garage. And like, you know, it's like this big like panels of sheet metal and just like a random door, you know. So like walking up to it, I was like, I hope I've been the right place. I see the correct address on here. I'm just gonna walk in. And I walk in and I don't remember everyone that was there that day. I really don't. But like, and like the thing that was scary to me the most, even though it was Dark Sheik who recommended me to it was, you know, having who I am be respected, because it's a hard thing to come by these days. But like from moment one, it was like I was just like a part of the family. Like it was incredible how warm and welcoming the environment is. The Stoner Brothers themselves and Anton are like really good and really nice with trans identities. Like they're great. I was really, I didn't know them at all, right? So I didn't know what to expect. And my expectation of all strangers is not to be treated well. And I was treated incredibly well from minute one, and I can't like begin to put over how genuinely nice they are when it comes to trans people and trans identities. They don't care. They're just like, that's who you are. Cool. Done. Like it's that simple. And that's how it needs to be.
No, I would definitely agree with you on that. I mean, that's wholeheartedly how it needs to be. Like, these things don't affect anyone else but the person, right? Like,
Hi.
just me existing is not impacting anyone else around me unless I'm, you know, like being
Right.
shitty to them or anything like that. But
Exactly.
just me being a person, you being a person, like, that's not an affront. It's not like a crime on anybody else. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I am like, in the almost 2 years I've been there, I don't recall a single instance of them ever accidentally misgendering me at all. Like, which is, it might seem like nothing to some people, but like, it's a lot. It's a like to have people who aren't trans never misgender me. That's like a rare occurrence. You know, it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So take me back just a little bit back in the past from that, because like obviously like Hood Slam, very affirming environment,
Yeah.
obviously. Sonar U, very affirming environment. And obviously like in like real life interactions with people, real life experiences, that sort of thing, like there's all, I think anybody that's trans, non-binary, any kind of queer, and that they have some level of like trauma that they've interacted with, right?
Right.
But in a like in the strictly a pro wrestling context, like you say, you were a fan of like WWE and NXT and stuff
Yeah.
before going to Hood Slam and everything like that. What was your like kind of relationship in terms of like your like how like your gender identity, your identity as yourself to pro wrestling at that time before like running into like a Dark Sheik or a a Rosie Fingers or something like that?
Yeah. It was very simply, I'm a person who watches wrestling in my home. Like, there wasn't much to it. Like, it didn't, like, I had never seen a trans person in wrestling, period, up until literally Dark Sheik. She's the first trans person I ever experienced in pro wrestling. So it was really just like, oh, this is this world that exists and it's entertaining and I love it and it's great. But like, you know, I don't belong in that world. I'm a fan and that's cool. And that was really the extent of it, especially when I was living in New York. I mostly just watched in the privacy of my own home with my partner at the time and a friend, and that was really it. Yeah, there was really nothing to
I mean, it almost the way that you characterize it almost feels like you weren't even able to really participate in like the communal aspect of it.
No, you know, and it's my fault for, I guess, fault. I don't know if fault is the right word, but I never really sought out local independent wrestling. Back then, I just watched it on TV. I was pretty busy, so I didn't, you know, it just never became much more than this is television until I moved out here to California.
Yeah. And but I mean I can understand like that aspect of maybe like not participating in that because like you don't necessarily know like what like let's face it, if your only exposure to pro wrestling was like WWE for the longest time and
Yeah.
how they've utilized queer coded characters
Right.
in the past, like maybe there wouldn't be like people wouldn't have like the spring in their step to run out to a WWE show just,
Yeah.
like, so I can understand that aspect. It's just, and it's so interesting to me to hear that like your first indie show was that Hood Slam show, and like it immediately like clicks so fast
Oh, yeah.
seeing Dark Sheik there. Because like the timeline of like you're talking about like kind of being in training, excuse me, being in training for like almost 2 years at this point, that kind of lines up with some of the timing of like the first time that I had Rosie on the show. And she was talking a lot about like the trainees at Stoner U, like
Yeah.
and all like the trans and non-binary trainees that have come out of there. And obviously like it lines up with like you starting there, it lines up with Lara
Yeah.
being there,
Yeah.
like it lines up with a few other people, that sort of thing. Like what was that, what was the training and environment like for you? Like how did you feel like you kind of took to it, and what was it like kind of being around other trans people in this space and in that way?
So it was not surprising to me that there were other trans people there because I knew of one. But it was surprising to me how many there were, how many queer people were there. It's not like the overwhelming majority or anything, but it's more than two. And that alone was surprising to me. You know, I didn't know what to expect. And Rosie was one of the first people that I saw. And when I first saw her, I did not know that she was trans, you know. I just didn't. And I was just like, whoever this person is, she's amazing. Like, I was immediately drawn to her and how, like, she, to me, in my very, very, very greenest of green limited scope, I was like, this person is confident and knows what she's doing in a way that I'm not used to seeing. And it's really cool. And then as it turns out, we became like best friends.
I was going to ask you about like that relationship, because it seems like just seeing the interactions like online and seeing y'all like on like show day at Barrison and that sort of thing, like it feels like there's a really like tight closeness between the two of you. Even the announcement of like Osha's 11, this new tag team that y'all have now.
Osha's 11 is best. Just anything that's a great pun, I live for. So I pop really hard for that name. She's one of my closest friends and has been for a little while now. We were friendly when I first started training in for a while. And, you know, I'm not going to speak for her and seeing a new trans person at the dojo. But, you know, I think she definitely went out of her way to make sure I felt welcome, and she succeeded. Not that other people didn't make me feel welcome, everyone did. I'm just saying, you know, she felt like she specifically went out of her way to do so. And yeah, we're pretty close nowadays, and it's great. She's wonderful.
I just love seeing the camaraderie and the closeness there on display. 'Cause like, you know, I don't know, like for me, like wrestling really is about like the relationships that you build, both like with the audience and the presentation, but also like the people you meet and grow alongside and that sort of thing. And I don't know, it just seems like there's something like really, really nice and special there so far.
Yeah, there
between
is.
The two of y'all. So whenever you go into training, were you going in thinking like, oh, I'll just ref, or were you going in with the intention to wrestle?
I was going in with the intention to wrestle.
Okay.
And I was very much the classic put this shirt on, you know, like at training, you know, they're like, can you just ref this match real quick? And I took to it like a duck to water, you know. it was not very long from me just randomly doing it on a training day to help out to start doing it on shows. It was a pretty quick turnaround.
So what was the first show that you got pulled onto? Like, I hesitate to ask because I don't know, was it Hood Slam? Was
no,
that your
no.
Okay.
I reffed a lot of shows before Hood Slam. The first one is this little show that happens a couple times a year here in Oakland. It's called the Urban Rumble. There's, you know, there's a good like 30 or 40 people there, something like that. I'm hope I'm not wrong. It's a guess. It's at like this community outreach center, you know, and it's with a lot of Stoner U people and a couple Hood Slam people. And it's a smaller, you know, a smaller local show.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's not bad though.
Like, no, yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great. They're really fun. I really enjoy them. but yeah, I'm just saying, you know, it's not like, oh, here's your first show. Welcome to Hood Slam. You know, it was on these smaller ones.
I feel like that would be a daunting thing if like your first show was Hood Slam.
Yeah, no, it would be. And mine was not even close. You know, it was probably like my 20th or something. Give or take. Yeah.
Nice. So like, what was it like for you, like that first like chance of like being part of the presentation, like being part of this art that was being put in front of people's eyes?
Hood Slam or
just in general, like first time, like in terms of like getting out and reffing.
Oh, I was so scared. and I had nothing to be scared about, but you know, that initial anxiety, I'd be surprised if anyone didn't feel it. But like, you know, I was like, okay, I've done practice matches, you know, in front of the students, and that's it. Okay, here we go. And the really, honestly, it's kind of funny too. Like the first match at that Urban Rumble, one of the wrestlers, who's someone I train with all the time, he broke his hand getting into the ring.
Oh, God.
Like, first match, he just like smacked his hand on the post. And I was like, oh man, we're really in it. And yeah, it was just this moment of like, oh my, like we're in it. But like, you know what? I don't credit to him, because he did the whole match and it was fine. The crowd didn't know. I barely knew, and it worked and everything was okay, you know? And I think having such an incredible thing happen in my first match, my first show, it made everything else feel a lot easier. I was like, well, if I could get through that.
I mean, I was gonna ask you, like, were there any like lessons that you that were like the hardest to learn, like the most important to learn and that sort of thing, but it feels like that's a key one there. It's just like,
Yeah.
yeah, like immediately you get into the ring and like the first match you're in there, something happens where like some shit could like go
Yeah.
off the rails or go bad and that sort of thing, but everything holds together.
Yeah. Yeah,
Like
the lesson that I learned, and it's something that the Steiner Brothers and Anton always say, is that the audience doesn't know when something goes wrong. For the most part, there might be one person who's like, oh, I know wrestling well enough and you messed that thing up. But for the most part, they have no idea. You know, you
yeah.
just keep going. If you just keep going, they didn't notice, or if they did, they're gonna forget about it, and you just keep working and it's okay. Something goes wrong, just keep going, just move on to the next thing. It's okay. It's okay to mess up.
Yeah. I feel like it's such a vital thing to stress, not just in terms of like pro wrestling, but just in terms of like life, you
Yeah.
know, just like, you know, because I feel like I know I have a tendency to like get in my own head and like beat myself up over like the smallest of things at
Me
times.
too. Me
But
too.
like having these like people around you and you know, continually like stressing you is like just keep going.
Yeah, just keep going. It's
Like
okay. It's okay. Whatever just happened is now in the past. Just keep going.
exactly. It's just like it's such a I always love looking at what like people can take away from pro wrestling and put into like daily life, and like that's
Yeah.
easily like one of the major things that I still have to teach, like remind myself of a lot of
Yeah, me too.
too.
I have to remind myself of it all the time, but you know, it still is a thing that wrestling has taught me.
Yeah. What would you say is like something that in your time so far in wrestling that has kind of taught you that you can apply outside of wrestling, beyond that?
Other than that, I would the first thing that comes to mind is that pain is temporary. Like, not just physical, but like
Yeah.
all pain, you know, like it hurts and it sucks, and you're allowed to feel it, and it's allowed to hurt and it's allowed to suck, but it won't suck forever. Eventually, it will stop sucking. It might be in a minute, it might be in a day, it might be in a year, but whatever it is that's hurting, it will stop.
Yeah. Was that something that you kind of struggled with prior to getting involved with pro wrestling?
Yeah. And I still struggle with it today,
Yeah.
but like it's a lesson that still sticks in my head as often as my brain will allow it. You know, bad things are going to happen to you, to me, to everyone. Sometimes it's going to feel like it's thing after thing after thing after thing, and it's never stopping, but it will. And however much it hurts, whatever this thing is that hurts, it won't hurt forever.
It's very true. It's very true, but it's also one of those things that can be hard to remember when in
Yeah,
the throes of those things.
absolutely.
I think it must be good to kind of have like a physical manifestation of that that can remind you of these things. Like, okay, well, if this pain will go away, this other pain will also,
Yeah,
like,
pretty
yeah.
much. Like, if you can survive Scott Rick Stoner giving you a chop, you can
Oof.
survive a lot of things.
Oh, I've heard that. I don't.
Oh, my goodness. Like, don't get
Boy.
me wrong, all the coaches chop pretty hard, but his make me cry every time.
I can understand why.
Yeah, it's pretty
Oh
hard.
God. All right, let's talk about Hood Slam.
Sure, sure.
So when do you get the call that you're gonna be on Hood Slam for the first time?
20 minutes before the show started.
Sounds like Hood Slam. All
Oh
right.
yeah.
This is real.
I know that on my award nomination from last year, it says like Hood Slam, comma, full queer. But I, you know, whenever I talk about this, I make sure to be clear. Like, I'm not one of Hood Slam's referees. You know, I've refereed two Hood Slam shows, and both times I was like an emergency backup. And that's cool. Like, you know, I'm not upset. I'm just, you know, I like to make it clear. Like, I'm one of Full Queer's refs for now. And I'm not one of Hood Slam's refs. You know, if I ref for Hood Slam again in the future, that'd be cool. I would love it very much. It's an amazing show and it's amazing time. But for the most part, at Hood Slam, I'm, you know, just there to help out with whatever they need.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's obviously like you bring up like the like not necessarily being a Hood Slam ref, and I feel like that's an interesting kind of thing to point out because like the refs, just like all the other like wrestlers and characters that we've seen over the last like decade plus of Hood Slam, the refs are like they have a like very distinct characters
Oh yeah.
there.
Oh yeah. The yeah. The main two refs at Hood Slam, yeah, they have their own very distinct characters. And it's great. They're very good foil to each other. You know, everyone loves to cheer Nuck Nuck. He's awesome. He's suave. He's cool. He's got swagger. And then like everyone hates Wiggles.
Fucking Wiggles.
Fucking Wiggles. You know, when I first went to Hood Slam and people were booing the crap out of Wiggles, I was the one person in the crowd that didn't get it yet. And I was like, no, can we just be nice to him? Like, I don't understand. And then like I finally got it and I was like, fuck you, Wiggles.
So obviously, like you only were like a few or a couple of Hood Slam shows, but like, how did that like hit you to know that like the show that introduced you to like transness in pro wrestling, positive trans representation in pro wrestling, was a show that was like calling you up, even if it was just as emergency backup, to be like, hey, can you get here?
It was the coolest thing. And I was
Yeah.
already there. It's not like, can you get here? I was
Okay,
already at
okay.
the show to help out. But it was like, you know, 20, 30 minutes before the show, it was like, we have no referees. And I was talking with Dark Sheik and I was like, hey, listen, I got you. You know, and she's like, okay, well, like, I only have one ref. And I was like, yeah, I got it. I can do the whole show. It's chill. Don't worry about it. And like, that was that. So I just went in. My first time at Hood Slam as a ref was emergency backup 20 minutes before the show. And I did the whole show.
You're a trooper.
Know, in hindsight now, like, having done what I've done, like there was only like five or six matches on that card. Like the Barrison show that you were talking about earlier, there's
Oh my God, there's so many matches on that
12, I
card.
believe, and I did
Yeah.
all of them but one. Like I didn't do the second match, but I did the other 11.
Nah, like I don't know. It's just I love whenever you come to these like full circle moments in
Yeah,
wrestling, you know, like
it was amazing.
yeah.
I in the moment I was just like focused on making sure I did my job. But like in hindsight, after the show, it was really cool. It was really amazing that like the show, like you said, the show that introduced me to indie wrestling, to transness in pro wrestling, and both of those things combined, used me. It was sweet. It was really cool. And then like the very next show, I worked that one too, because again, there was an emergency, someone couldn't make it. So it was awesome. And I'm really grateful and really happy to have done it. And I hope I get to at some point again in the future.
I hope you do as well, because you say to me that you've only worked like two Hood Slam shows. It feels like you have worked more. Like it feels like you're starting to like get a bit of like a, like even like talking to some of the other people that don't live in the Bay that watch Hood Slam that I know, and like they know the official at this point. You know,
Well,
like
I
it's
think
one
that's
of
because of Full
oh,
Queer.
but it's also because of Full Queer, but like specifically in like a conversation about Hood Slam, like it's like Brozef throwing that out there, like it connects with people. But
That's
yes,
true.
like obviously that comes from Full Queer.
And
And
it also comes from the fact that I'm at every Hood Slam.
yeah.
Like I have only reffed twice. I've only actually been on the show twice, but I'm at every single show. Typically, I'm selling merch, but like I'm always there. So I think that's part of it too. I think a lot of the fans there know who I am just because they see my face every show, even though I'm not actually working. They
Yeah.
still interact with me because they come and buy some sweet shirts.
Which they are pretty sweet. Definitely. All right. Well, I feel like that's a perfect avenue to talk more about Full Queer now,
Sure, yeah.
because obviously Full Queer, that's been a huge part in the work that you've done
Yeah.
in pro wrestling. And I love how Full Queer has evolved over time too. You know, like
Yeah.
from the first event where it was really about like we have this championship that we want to put out there. We want to do a pride focused show, and like maybe it's like once a year. And
Yeah.
then all of a sudden, like Marco and Rosie are teaming up, and now we're running like throughout the year. You know, we're partnering with these street festivals. We're partnering with Folsom, with Barrison. You know, Marco hits me up like almost every 2 or 3 months to like say you need to come to Folsom. Damn
Yeah.
it! I
He's right. You do.
understand he's right. I understand he's right, and I tell him that every time. It's like I gotta see what I can make work. But like it's just interesting to see like this company that you know really was. I mean, from the first show that happened at like the East Bay Pro Wrestling at their spot, and now to see it kind of grow into like, you know, and I hate to phrase it this way because like it does. I feel like it like diminishes like what the original like first two like Full Queer shows did, but like it's turned into like an actual like promotion in a way, you know,
And it
like
is.
yeah, exactly. I mean it is definitely, you know, it's just I don't know, it's just been interesting to see the evolution for it, and it feels like the way that the timing has worked out, like you kind of whether you were participating in it or from the outside looking in, like it was there like something that kind of evolved alongside like you going through training in a way. I don't know how close, like how close was that relationship with Full Queer during that time?
So like my first experience on a Full Queer show was Barrison, not this last year, but the year before.
Oh, okay.
It had been like 4 months into training about. And I just stood next to the entrance tent, rang the bell. That was my job that day. But very shortly after I started reffing on shows, very shortly after that Urban Rumble, Rosie asked me to start reffing for them because she liked my work, and also we trained together and we're friends. And so like it was really from then on that I was just suddenly a part of every show. They liked my work consistently enough to keep bringing me on. That was awesome. And Full Queer got me other work and other places like that, that exposure. So like really, like while it wasn't the first place that I ref for, it was, very much so a catalyst into getting to me to where I am today. And like there's no world in which I could ever be anything other than grateful for it. Like they've been really good to me, for simply like showing up and working hard and always having a good attitude. And like they are really good about rewarding people who really care and really try. And that's awesome.
No, that's definitely the attitude that I've gotten from that company as well, just based off of like who they featured on their shows, like the causes that they support through their shows and that sort of thing. Like even you mentioned like the first event that you there, even if you were just ringing the bell, at Barrison in 2022. Like, that's one of those shows that will always stick out in my mind because I know that was like the show where Joshua City came back and had his first match in I don't know how long, like years at that point, against Marco, because of all of the stigma around, and also like lack of knowledge about, HIV status and that sort of thing, and being, undetectable and that sort of thing. And just, I don't know, like that moments like that and moments that like what we saw at, like from the footage I've seen of Folsom, where we get to see like even if it's just something as like sort of like on the nose as like Anton getting to kind of embrace a little bit different side of him in a different environment and that sort of thing. Or like the Barrison Street show from this past year where like you're running a wrestling show next to a make your own cock ring stand. And like
We
like
really
it
were like right next to them. It was awesome. I loved it.
It
I
was so
hope we
good.
are again this year.
But like it just being like so closely knit with like the queer culture of the Bay Area and all of these like queer focused events, and also to bring in like people that maybe don't like are from the community but like have had like obstacles to getting back into the ring, and giving them understanding where they're from because we are of the same, like we are of the same folk, right? We understand each other a bit better, and providing opportunities for them, like I don't know, there's just so much about like what like the mission behind Full Queer and how they've kind of executed it over the last couple of years has really been endearing in a lot of ways. Is that something that kind of like was that something that you noticed from the very beginning, or was that something that kind of like as you like participated more, just kind of more and more like grew on you?
From the very beginning. Absolutely. They've made it no secret what their mission is, and that is to elevate queer people who are wrestlers, like, and to help and support the queer community at large through the small little niche that we can do. Like, Full Queer's always been about uplifting queer people more than anything else. And it was really impossible for me to not be incredibly drawn to it. I kind of have fallen into a lot of this by stumbling around in the dark, but like I've fallen in the right places.
You say like stumbling around in the dark, like I don't know if you could like explain that a little bit more. Like I'm just
Well,
curious exactly what you mean by
I
that.
just mean like, getting invited to work on Full Queer. Like it was to me, it felt like, kind of an accident. Like I barely knew what Full Queer was at all, and it was like, hey, come help on this show. And I was like, okay, sweet. And I was like, thanks for helping on the show. Come ref on the next one. It was like, it felt accidental, but it also was very organic. Like I just feel like my whole wrestling journey so far has been me just kind of stumbling around and seeing what I walk into, like I'm gonna hit my shin on something, ow, but then that thing is gonna be like a treasure chest full of like, goodies.
I love how this ties back into like the story that y'all are telling right now with all of the ref bumps.
Oh yeah. That's just me. That's just me. Like I just walk into stuff. I don't know.
Are you
Stuff
accident
happens to
prone
me.
in real life?
Pretty much, yeah. mean, I'm accident prone in the ring too. The whole two fractured ribs thing is 100% true. I currently have two fractured ribs.
I had a feeling that that was not something that would be like kayfabed, so to speak, that
Yeah,
happened.
especially as like if that was kayfabe, that would have been the most random thing ever. Just like showing up to a show. I'm injured. Why? I don't know. I just am. That happened on a different show out here. I was the very, very thin slice of deli meat in between a Marco and Rick Scott Stoner sandwich.
Oh Lord, that'll do
Yeah,
it.
it was rough. It was
Oh.
rough.
Well, I'm now I feel bad for like all of the laughing that we're doing, but I
Oh, it's
hope it's not
okay.
too painful.
It's not the
Okay.
worst. It's not the
Okay.
worst. I'm at the point now where the only thing that really hurts is like breathing. But like laughing and sneezing aren't miserable anymore, so that's good.
Okay. That's good. It's just the breathing that
Yeah,
hurts.
just breathing sucks, you know?
Okay. That old thing.
Yeah. That old
Lord.
chestnut.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so obviously, like this journey you've had with Full Clear is leading you to getting into the ring now,
Yeah.
but or at least like challenging to get into the ring.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten any official word yet
Yeah.
from Full Clear management, or I guess the new is Ashton Starr the HR of Full Clear now? I read that
I
somewhere.
am in as in the dark about that as you are.
Okay,
I
okay.
know that was a surprise to me. We'll find out.
I'm sure we will,
If
knowing
he is, I've got a
Ashton.
lot of words for him, that's for sure.
There you go. There you
Like
go.
the first ones are, where have you been?
But obviously, you've laid out the challenge to Dave
Yeah.
Reckoning for the next show, which I believe is in, is it in June or
June
July?
9th.
June 9th. There we go.
Yeah.
Sorry. Normally, I'm good on dates,
That's
or
all
I
right.
try to
That's
be
all
good
right.
on dates, but
It is 6-9.
nice.
Yeah, nice.
But I guess talk to me about what are you looking forward to the most about the transition from reffing to wrestling in a full quarter ring.
It's getting to tell different kinds of stories is the biggest one for me. Like, I love wrestling. I'm blown away and still blown away by how much I really love it, how much I took to it. You know, I had no expectations going into training, but like, I feel like this feels like my thing, you know? And obviously everyone who does it feels the same way, but I'm just like glad that I am one of those people. And another thing, and yeah, I really want to tell stories from the perspective of the character that I am bringing into the ring. It's going to be really fun. I really feel like, you know, I can do the goofiest stuff to serious stuff, like with this character. And it'll work either way. So I'm really just looking forward to seeing what the heck happens with everything that happens. And I'm still gonna ref when people want me to, but like I want to wrestle as much as I can.
I can understand that. It never hurts to have options. It never hurts
Yeah.
to have diversity
Yeah.
in what you can bring to the table there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love reffing. I have no problem doing it. You know, it's
Yeah.
awesome.
And I love the snippets of the character that we've seen so far. There's it's very like he's very serious in promos, very determined in promos, but and then at the same time, the idea of incorporating chess as much as you are into
Yeah.
this character, that gives you so many different directions you can go in with that. 'Cause you can either at points you could be very cool and calculated
Yeah.
and strategic and that sort of thing. But at the same time also there can be an innate goofiness
Oh
that can
yeah.
come along with that too.
Oh, absolutely. And if there wasn't that possibility, I wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I live for the goofy stuff.
Where did this is this I'm assuming this the chess aspect of the character comes from a personal place for you.
Does.
Okay. What's your history with the Queen's game?
So, thank you for saying that. It is the
Yes.
Queen's game.
Yes.
So however much chess I haven't played in my life, you know, I'm fine at it. I do enjoy it. I'm actually so just Reina Capablanca is a direct link to the Cuban chess player from the 30s, J.R. Capablanca. It stands for Jose Raul, but he always went by JR. He's my grandpa's uncle.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, he's one of the best of all time. He's a world champion, grandmaster. He's, you know, considered to be one of the best players ever. Right up there with Bobby Fischer in ranking. Like, some people put him higher, some people put him lower, you know, whatever. But yeah, he's my grandpa's uncle on my mom's side. And so I named myself very specifically, obviously, from him. You know, Jess is a girl's name, starts with J and sounds like chess. Reina, Spanish for queen. Like, it fits very well. The gimmick came about because at that first Barrison show that we were talking about, after the show, there's this bar like next door, and they had this huge chess set, like, you know, like with pieces as tall as your leg. And they were like, they went to us, and I don't know why. And they're like, listen, this isn't ours. Do you want it? And so we took all these chess pieces home, and I still have most of them in my backyard. And the character, the idea for the chess gimmick was born on that day. And it's been a long time that I've still had that as like the gimmick I want to do. And I'm glad that I get to do it even a little bit.
I love doing the show sometimes because like so I in doing like research ahead of this, like obviously I looked up like you know J.R. Capablanca, knowing like he's like I know of like I played chess in the past, like I know a little bit about it, but I don't know like all of like the grandmasters and everything like that and that sort of thing. But like learning like seeing that like the name was tied directly there, I'm like, oh, okay, this is definitely like a thing. I had no idea that like that was like a familial thing for you. Like that is wild.
I know, it's really cool. And like my whole like I always consider the like slightly off the beaten path gaming gene in my family coming from him, because everyone in my family has some like unbelievable skill level at some game. Like my mom is a multiple time world champion foosball player, one of the best women to ever do it.
Oh, wow.
My uncle is a top tier bridge player. You know, in my youth, in my previous life, I was a pro level like Yu-Gi-Oh player.
Sick.
Yeah, like we all do. Everyone in my family does something, and I'm like, it all comes from him. It all comes from Capablanca.
I God damn it. I just love learning all these things. I love learning. I love like this through line with the family. Have you spoke like have you told your family about like the character and like how what's their response been so far to the idea?
Positive. It's like my family is a little peculiar in the sense that we don't talk to each other very much. And it has nothing to do with who I am. Like, that's how everyone is with everyone. Like, whoever I send a message to, I'll get a reply in a couple weeks if I'm lucky. But that's how it is. And so, like, even though I want it to be better, that's just, I don't know, it's just how it is. But they've been positive to it. Like, I've told my mom about it. Excuse me. She is all about it. My little sister who lives out here in the Bay, she thinks is awesome. You know, my family think it's cool. They're into it.
I can't see it any other way. You have to think that's cool at that
Yeah,
point. Like you
like
have like you're paying homage to like this incredibly like influential person in your family. You're paying homage to like this through line of skill through your family in a way. Like it's just God. There this is why I love like talking to people like this because like there's so much more than just like, oh, it can be goofy or it can be strategic. Like, no, there's so much more to this stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much like it's this pull back this like, God
Can also
damn.
be just deeply personal, and it's awesome.
Exactly. So.
And it's also like a nod to my Cuban heritage too, because like he's a Cuban player. And it's nice, like my mom's side is Cuban and Jewish, and I really love and really relate to that side of my family. So getting to pull from that too, it just adds another layer of how personal it is and how into it and excited I am to do it.
I love all of that for you. I love all of it. God. Well, Jess, as we start to wind down here a little bit, I tend to like to end shows on fun questions, fun ones
Sure.
here. And I thought the chess question was going to be the fun one, but now you brought up that you were a pro level Yu-Gi-Oh player.
True.
Okay. How does competing at a Yu-Gi-Oh tournament compare to existing in pro wrestling? I feel like Yu-Gi-Oh is like supremely more cutthroat.
Well, I mean, it is very cutthroat. When I played, it's been a long time since I've played. When I played, there was very rampant and very abundant cheating. And no
As you
matter
do.
what, no matter what people want to say, it's true. Most of the pro players from back in the day weren't particularly better than anyone else. They were just better at cheating. And come at me if anyone out there somehow is related to this field and thinks they know what they're talking about. But it was. That's just how it was. And it's not like that I've experienced in pro wrestling. There is some cutthroatness to it, but out here in the Bay, everyone's family and we all love each other. That's mostly been my experience.
Yes, that's been my experience too. The short amount of time that I've got to spend around like the greater like Bay Area wrestling community is definitely what I feel like. I don't know, like it's just okay, this might be the better question to end on rather
Sure.
than just like talking about how cutthroat Yu-Gi-Oh can be.
Yeah.
What is like the most like interesting or like gratifying experience that you had during your time as a pro Yu-Gi-Oh player?
The same experience that I'm finding I have in pro wrestling, and that is making connections and making bonds with people and making friends. Like there are people from my Yu-Gi-Oh days who I still talk to today. And I haven't played Yu-Gi-Oh in 13 years, and that's pretty cool. And in pro wrestling, it's much the same. I'm making friends with people who I don't live anywhere near, and we're close, and it's awesome. And it feels like I have community almost wherever I go.
I mean, that's the true power of all these things, right?
Yeah,
It's the sense of
yeah,
community they create.
yeah.
It's the bonds. Absolutely love it. Jess, this has been a whole lot of fun. Thank you
Same.
so much for coming on the show. Like, God. And I'm bummed that I'm bummed that we didn't talk more when I was down in San Francisco last year.
That's all right. I'll see you
Yeah.
at Folsom this year. So,
Marco's just gonna weaponize the entire full queer roster against me now, isn't he?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
God
Yeah.
damn it.
Thank you for having me. This has been
Oh,
great.
thank you. Let everybody know where they can find you online.
On Twitter, I am at Domino L Moon. On Instagram, I am at Eat My Queerios, but the O in Queerios is a zero. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Cool.
Yeah, and I'm gonna kick Dave's ass in June, that's for
Hell
sure.
yeah,
Yeah.
do it,
Yeah.
do
Or
it.
I'm
I'm
mostly
here
gonna kick
for it.
his face, but yeah.
You can kick multiple body
Yeah,
parts.
exactly. I can kick all of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Jess.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Definitely. My thanks once again to Jess for taking the time to come on the show and chat all about this amazing period in her pro wrestling journey here so far. I know she seems very excited about jumping into the ring for the first time in full queer in a wrestling capacity, and I'm excited for her, and I know I'm not the only one that's excited for her as well. so yeah, that's gonna be a lot of fun. That's gonna do it for us this week. Come back next week. We will have another fun episode that might be along some similar lines as this one. Just hint, hint. But yeah, before we go though, always we have to shout out the roster of lovelies. If you want to join the roster of lovelies, you can go over to patreon.com/LGBTRingPod, subscribe with the $3 tier, and you will have your name called out alongside these luminaries of supporters that we have here, people like Val Capone, Zach Walker, Alex E., and Jerry Legend. On every show that we do here on LGBT in the Ring. So, you know, if you want to be counted there, LGBTRingPod.com, Patreon.com/LGBTRingPod, rather. And of course, at the $5 tier, you not only get those roster of lovely benefits, but you also unlock all of the bonus shows that we do every month, every episode of Required Reading that we've done so far, almost a year's worth of bonus shows that we have available over there at patreon.com/LGBTRingPod. Of course, financial support is not always feasible for everyone. I know that personally well. So, you know, word of mouth, telling your friends, your fellow queers about the show, rating and reviewing on your podcast platform of choice. Those things are always helpful, and we are very grateful to all of you that continue to do that for us and to continue to spread the word about the show as we approach another milestone number of episode 250 here on the show. So just wild. But yeah, that's going to do it for us this week. Until next time, y'all stay messy, wash your hands, wear your mask, get vaccinated and boosted if at all possible, and shout out to Mama Beaver. Bye.